Hey, thanks for joining us for another edition of Your Retirement Elevated. On today's podcast, we're going to talk about something that's actually a little hard for many retirees to do, spending money. So we're going to have a few thoughts on that on today's episode. Many of us find it easy to save money, and then when it comes time to reverse it, it's a little bit more difficult. So we're going to talk about the psychology behind it, some strategies, and some things that you should know if you are preparing for retirement and kind of wondering, what goes into all this spending money conversation? Scott's going to break it down for us on today's episode.
Let us help you reach your peak in retirement. It's time for Your Retirement Elevated.
Another edition of Your Retirement Elevated is here. Walter Storholt alongside Scott Dugan, co-founder, managing partner of Elevated Retirement Group with more than 22 years of financial planning experience. Scott, good to be with you this week. How are you, my friend?
I'm wonderful, and I have a question for you right off the bat.
Yes, what is it?
When did you discover you had a voice for radio and podcasting? How young were you when you discovered you had a superpower?
I don't know about the voice part. I started in broadcasting at 16, and when I used to play sports as a kid, I always chose goalie so that I could broadcast the game. Because, in kids' sports, often the goalie is either seeing a ton of action or no action, depending on how good everybody else on your team is. So I was on good teams, so I would just sit there back as the goalie doing nothing, basically broadcasting the game, literally out loud. Like, I would just be talking to myself in goal, broadcasting the game. Got me in trouble a few times because I got so wrapped up in it. I was like, oh, they're about to shoot it at me. I better jump up and save the ball or the puck. So I guess that's how early I sort of realized it, but... Yeah, not the true voice until, I don't know, maybe sometime in college somebody said, hey, you used to have a high-pitched voice, but now you sound like really good. So they noticed that change, I guess, as I went from a teenager to a seasoned, somewhat adult at that point. So there
gotcha.
You go. Brief history.
And gotcha. And you and I have been working together off and on for almost 10 years.
Gosh, we're almost at a decade now. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. Radio days and then the podcast world transition. So
and then here we are. Here's the 10 more.
10 more, my friend.
That's right.
Let's do it. I love it. Well, go ahead. Spending money.
Obviously, the opener, we talked about spending money. And this is going to be a collection of thoughts.
Okay.
We've talked about it before on the show, and it was in the process of writing my first book. And in this idea of the spending go-go, slow-go, no-go. And so I've done a lot of research on spending habits. What's the data show? And so that's going to be coming out. I just submitted a Kiplinger article last week, kind of about that topic. But in that research, I came across several things and jotted down some ideas. So I just want to cover those today because we're very fortunate that the clientele that we have the privilege to serve, people that seem to gravitate towards us, are people that, again, we're fiscally conservative. They put money away. They controlled their debt. And really, when it comes down to it, they don't need to put a tremendous amount of pressure on their nest egg to supply a supplemental income stream to their pension and or Social Security. So we're very fortunate. And more so, our clients have a problem of actually turning the tap on or reversing course and go from a saver to a spender. And going from that saving phase to spending phase can be a big psychological jump. And hence, we talk about money. There's really two fundamental ways to use money, right? One is as a tool to live a better life. The other is a yardstick of status to measure yourself against others. Many people aspire for the former, but get caught up chasing the latter. And one of my favorite quotes is, comparison is a thief of joy.
It's a good point. Yeah, it's very true.
So again, money is a tool to live a better life. And depending on your upbringing or what you've imprinted in you about money, it's either to enjoy things or it's to achieve status in the eyes of others. I wish I had it prepared. It came to my mind, but if you ever get a chance, Google the letter from Winston Churchill's father to him once he finally got into school. It will crush your heart of the disapproval of his father and the scathing accusations he makes to his son. And he ends it with, "Your mother sends love." And
I love it.
If you read that and study the life of Churchill, and we're talking about the money aspect, but would he have done all the things that he did if he did not have those things imprinted on him and that disappointment from his father cast upon him in writing, nonetheless? And so again, we use money for different things. Again, do we use it to enhance the lives of our loved ones, people around us, or do we use it to prove or attempt to prove the world that we've actually made it, we've actually done it? And that could be by a house purchase, car purchase, clothing purchase, watch purchase, you name it. But that, I think that's a fundamental thing. Understand there's two ways to use money. You got to be very careful of how you use it as a yardstick or a way to improve your life.
Yeah, kind of a two-way street there. Sort of an you are what you eat sort of aspect to it.
It is, because money is a tool that you can use, but if you're not careful, it can use you. And so we talked about stuff. Sometimes the stuff you spend money on has so much influence over your autonomy and sanity that it's not clear whether you own things or the things own you. Think about someone that buys an extravagant house with unbelievable, you know, landscaping and things like that. Well, that comes with a cost. You know, you have upkeep. You have to have an army of people. Depending if you've got a big 5-acre estate, you're probably not mowing that whole yard. You know, you're not tending probably all those gardens. So again, you got to be careful of what you get yourself into, you know, and use it for a tool and not let it kind of influence you, because everyone can spend money in a way that will make them happier. But unfortunately, there's like this no cheat code or universal formula on how to do it. And so the things that makes you happy might seem crazy to you and vice versa. Like many things in finance, debates over what kind of lifestyle you should live are often just people with different personalities taking over each other. And if you don't have a clear definition of what it is you want to experience, there's plenty of ideas given to you by the world of marketing and corporations of what you might think you want to do. Follow along and copy that person's life. You know, I listen to a lot of podcasts in my drive time and my downtime. Is it talking about influencers, you know, social media influencers. And it was talking about in Santa Monica at the airport, they have a hangar that's basically a set that they rent it in 15-minute increments. And you show up, you book a 15, 30-minute increment, you have changes of clothing, and they film you getting on the plane, they film you inside the plane, but the plane never leaves the hangar. So in today's world, what we're shown through social media is a carefully curated aspects of someone's life that a lot of times are completely fabricated. No one posts and submits the mundane parts of life, the worst parts of life, very, very rarely. It's a carefully curated set of things of how we want to be perceived. That's why there's filters. That's why there's all these things that people do, you know? And so it's crazy. So you gotta be careful of mimicking or trying to go after something that's perpetrated you as this. If I just did that, that would be great. But that's not always the case, you know, to do that. And we talked about it a little bit earlier, is that, you know, how you spend your dollars can definitely be a reflection of what you've experienced in life. And so again, if someone grew up in an impoverished upbringing, owning a fancy car might be the ultimate symbol of whatever you've overcome. To someone that's grown up with money and money has been part of their family lineage for a long time, it might be the ultimate symbol of ego and insecurity, you know, to have that. But, you know, people don't just spend money on things they find fun or useful. their decisions often reflect the psychological wounds of their life experiences. And so again, it's how do we arrive at our decisions? We talk about a lot of this in our process is you've made decisions so far about with your money, about the information that you've gathered over time. We just need to make sure, is the information you have correct? Is the process you have correct? Are the things we need to fix prior to making future decisions? You know, make sure that decision-making process is wired tight and a good process to ultimately get you the best outcome possible. So, you know, when you think about money, you know, spending money can buy happiness, but it's often not the most, you know, direct path. You know, the big, nice house might make you happier, but mostly because it makes it easier to spend time with friends and family. And that fact that friends and family are actually what are making you happy. It's not the house. It's, hey, we've got a big enough place to bring people together. Money that you've saved and kept sometimes can buy something intangible but valuable, which is freedom, autonomy, independence, a sense of control over your time. Because every dollar that you have saved back is basically gives you the ability to have more freedom potentially in the future. You know, so at the same time, you know, some wealthy people struggle to spend money. I tell you, that's a lot of our clients, you know, our 7- and 8-figure clients. They struggle to spend money on things that would make them happy because they're a saver, because it's such an ingrained part of their identity. And what people set out to make a strategy to achieve a better life turns into an ideology that you're beholden to. And so it's, I don't want to spend my principal just the interest or growth off my principal, because I don't want to erode that safety net down to a level that I'm uncomfortable with. And I completely understand that. I grew up in a very small town, you know, middle-class family. And the minute that I could buy surplus of things, and I've said that this has been years ago, but when I could buy two things of deodorant, a package, three packs of toothpaste, toothbrushes, towels, clothing, food, that was a security blanket for me to have surplus. And the same thing with money in the bank. It's not that I had the strong desire to be wealthy. It's I want to insulate myself from experiences I had growing up where we didn't have money. And I think that affects us all in different ways, but I'm sure that, you know, that we all have these times where we see money in a different light. I'm sure you've had issues or had episodes like that in your life, Walter.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our past experiences shape who we are, so it's no surprise that that would also translate to our view of, you know, finances and how we save money and also how we spend money. And I think it's just really interesting to kind of hear your perspective on this. And now to accumulate even more years, you're working with folks who are often at retirement. So they've had, you know, 30 more years than I have of accumulating money and thinking about spending it, and other things happen in their lives. And yeah, just imagine all the different ways that can shape someone's attitudes.
Oh, most definitely. And, you know, I look at, you know, my family members, and you can definitely tell in my grandparents' age bracket, you know, they're born prior, you know, right in or prior to the Great Depression. And so that was imprinted on them. They were great savers, you know, that generation, you know, they tend to be better savers. Today's generation, I think right now you've kind of seen more of a, we may not have tomorrow, so let's live for experiences. We're going to see how that plays out. You know, this current generation is going to transfer a lot of wealth to the people that want experiences now. You know, so that may be their saving grace on the back end for their retirement, but I don't know what that looks like, you know, past that. So again, when you think about this, you know, everything is relative. There's no such thing as an objective level of wealth. And so again, it's relative to everyone. So people look around and say, you know, where's this person live? What are they driving? What are they wearing? And then that's how our aspirations are calibrated amongst our surroundings. And, you know, bottom line, there's really a difference between nice stuff and fancy stuff. And I would say our clients tend to be on the nice stuff. And so we don't have a lot of gigantic houses and flashy cars. There's a few out there, nothing wrong with that. But, you know, one provides tangible utility The other offer is social utility. It depends on the circle you run in, you know, which is more important. And if you think about, you know, think about Toyotas and Lexus, you know, Toyota is filled with things that makes driving more pleasant, while the Lexus is mostly just status and bragging rights. So it's kind of the same. Obviously, they're brother and sister vehicles. Some are fancier, and they even have some of the same models. Just one is, you know, decked out a little bit nicer. And really, in the grand scheme of things, as we wrap this up, is, and this is because I see this with our clients, the more money you have, the harder it becomes to know how to spend it in a way that will make you happy. And that confusion actually pops up and displays itself at fairly low levels of income. And there's a writer, Luke Burgess, wrote, "After meeting our basic needs as creatures, we enter into the human universe of desire. And knowing what to want is much harder than knowing what to need." And I think in today's world, we're surrounded with images, examples, marketing pieces, whether it's magazines, TV, internet, you name it. There are a lot of things that are presented to us as solutions to a better life. And if we've got our basics covered and we have time and flexibility, we have time to think about those things and think about to ponder those things. And really what it comes down to, if we solve those basic things of life, we add on things that enrich our lives, our loved ones, our communities, and that could be volunteering, spending time with family, taking trips, traveling, you name it. It's just, we want to build that resume, that reservoir of experiences that enrich our lives. And we're very fortunate. We serve a very small portion of the population that have put money away, are able to live that work optional lifestyle. They're able for their pension, Social Security, and their savings to provide flexibility to go out and do the things they want to do, live and cover their bases, but have more, plenty of resources to go out and do other things to improve their lives and the lives around them. And so spending that money, just make sure that we're spending that money for the right reasons, for the right outcomes. And again, that enhances our lives. And I'm not coming from a place of a white ivory tower. This is coming from a person that sometimes can have a hard time doing exactly that. I like more than adequate emergency fund. I like things that are perceived as bargains. I don't like a lot of frivolous things. I like nice things, but it takes a while to get them. And so spending money on experiences and outcomes, and I'll give you a perfect example. You know, 20 plus years ago, I had a decision to make. Do I go back to school or do I embark on a career path? And I was applying to chef school. I wanted to be a chef. I wanted to be a professional chef. And I thought, you know what? I probably should get a job. And fortunately or unfortunately, one of my good friends interviewed in the financial services world. He goes, "Hey, why don't you come down and interview with this company and maybe make some money before you go to chef school?" Okay, I'll consider that. Well, it wasn't part-time. It's lasted for over 20 years, and I didn't go to chef school.
Okay. Although you still cook some mean steaks on the side.
I do. But I will say, in the desire to do things that press and increase my skill level, to do things that will expand my horizons and challenge me, I enrolled in a 12-week professional cooking class. And it's 12 weeks of instruction. It's only one day a week, but it's going to test me because it's for rookies like me, but there's also people that are contemplating going into that field are going to be in this class as well. And so it's just cooking, I know, it's an experience I'm looking forward to. It's an experience I'm a little nervous about because I don't know like the skill levels of people, but it's something that I thought, you know what? We have the time and the resources. I want to do it because ultimately it's not because I want to be a chef. Ultimately, is that's something I want to do a long time ago. I want to get better because I know I get a lot of pride and accolades when I cook for people. I can express myself through cooking. And so this is a way for me to up my game and selfishly, hopefully get better accolades and better compliments because my skill levels are going to be there. So it is selfish for sure. But there's going to be hopefully a lot of people that benefit from my newly found talents when I finish that 12-week stint.
That is fantastic. Yes, line up everyone to be Scott's friend so you can get some of that good eats when the time comes.
Exactly.
That's great. Well, thank you, Scott, for the insight into some of your personal experiences with spending money and what went into those decisions and what you got out of those different elements, but then also especially what some of your own clients have gone through thinking about them, making big decisions about spending. And if this is a broader conversation than I think most people might assume it is on the surface. So it's pretty cool to kind of hit all these different angles on the show today. How about you? Are you having trouble spending money in retirement, or as you approach retirement, wrapping your brain around that eventuality of kind of shifting from saver to spender? One of these other elements that we've talked about on the show today, does that impact you? Well, if you'd like to talk that out with a professional, you can certainly have a conversation with Scott and the team at Elevated Retirement Group. All you have to do to get in touch is call 913-393-4724. Ask your questions, maybe come in for a consultation, go a little bit deeper into some customized guidance about your financial life and answering some of these big questions when it comes to planning for retirement and beyond. You can also go online to listentoscott.com. On the website, we've got past episodes and more information for you to check out there as well. All that contact information is in the description of today's show. And Scott, we thank you so much for all your help and guidance on the show today. And we'll be talking with you on another episode soon, I believe.
Bon appetit.
Great way to end it. You got it, my friend. We'll talk to everybody next time right back here on Your Retirement Elevated.
Investment advisory services offered through Elevated Capital Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.